AG1 is a comprehensive and convenient blend of over 70 high quality ingredients. And what that means is each morning when I wake up, before I do anything else, I drink AG1 to set me up for the day. It keeps me clear headed, full of energy and focused on whatever I need to do, like writing the fighting cock, for example. One scoop once a day before breakfast and that's it. I've actually found that I've not been needing coffee in the morning to get me started. I've still been drinking coffee because I love coffee, but it's not because it's like a necessity to do so. AG1 is made out of the highest quality ingredients subject to the strictest manufacturing standards. AG1 is NSF certified for sport, and this process involves exhaustive testing and verification that every serving of AG1 is exactly what you see on the label. If you want to take ownership of your health, try AG1 and get a free 1 year supply of vitamin D and 5 free AG1 travel packs for your first purchase. Go to drinkag1.com/thefightingcock. That's drinkag1.com/thefightingcock to get started. And to help the podcast. Thank you very much. Have a great day and enjoy the show.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
It's the fighting. It's the fighting. Clock. It's the fighting. It's the fighting.
Episode 4, Season 12 of the Fighting God Podcast. My name is Flav, and on the show this week, we've got Ricky, fresh off his two-week holiday with his wife and children. How was that? It's not as good. Doesn't matter what anyone says. It's not as good as 3 days with Amsterdam with the boys. Just is it?
Yeah, you'd be... they're two different types of holidays, aren't they, really?
Yeah,
they're absolutely... One is gorging yourself, and one is... just laying down in the sun, really.
How much food did you eat? I bet you've put on about 3 stone.
Yeah, I did. Like, the thing is as well, like, I'm at a time in my life where I can afford to eat nicer food.
Oh, really? Hello.
I didn't want to go.
What are you talking?
I didn't want to go to the same fucking English and Irish bars where Brenda is knocking about a shepherd's pie for €5, that all day is, and all that lot. That's fine, but I'm at that point where it's like, I want to eat something that's just not been in a Chinese Tupperware box for the past 6 months in the freezer.
You basically don't want to be served, and then, every now and then it's all right, but then, and you just be served, and you walk off, and some massive knockers just rub against your shoulders as they walk off. It's not always the best look. There's no, I mean, is that, sometimes I think, is that, maybe that's misogynistic, I don't know. Just maybe referring to breasts is not as knockers is the problem. I don't know, Mark, have you got any input here?
I've learned recently to just stay out of it when you're going on one of these things, because it's just better for everyone.
I'm asking you to help me. I'm not staying.
See, when we first met, Flav, I tried to help you, and then you just kept going. I'm like, I can't. Maybe if this most holiest of thou ginger socialist man can't even help Flav, then, you know, I don't know. Maybe it's just the race has run.
I haven't been cancelled just yet, but we're just waiting for
it. But no, I think it's the word knockers. Yeah, just avoid knockers.
Okay, breasts. Some massive breasts rubbing against the back of your shoulders as she drops off your ham and eggs. It's not what you want. Mammaries. Every single... Mammaries. I mean, you've added one. So you're a part of the problem. So you had a great holiday, Ricky. Mark, how have you been since you last been on? It's been a few weeks. Mark is also a part of the Danish speaking podcast, which is
Lydende White Hart Danes.
Yes. So if you're one of the very few Danish speakers who listen to the Fighting Cock, and you want to hear
people speaking in your native tongue about Tottenham Hotspur, then you can do that at that podcast, which I can I'll never remember the name of. But I do support it, and I support you in all your ventures, Mark.
Thank you.
lots coming up in this episode. We've obviously been talking about the shithousery of Tottenham Hotspur and the club that we've turned into, the hair pulling, the goading, the crying, the absolute bizarre piousness from Chelsea Football Club, and they've suddenly sort of turned into this holier than thou football club that never done anything wrong in the history of their being. Obviously, the overall performance, that last second winner. But before all that, for the last time for just a little bit, this is the NordVPN read. And I thought the best thing to do here, because we've exhausted the porn jokes, although they weren't really jokes, they were just talking about Ricky's experiences. But I thought the best thing to do is just sort of reiterate some of the amazing things you can do with NordVPN just for the price of a coffee. So you can watch Spurs games that are broadcast anywhere in the outside of the UK at any time. As long as they're not broadcast here, you'll be able to find them. So 3 p.m. games on a Saturday, you can go and get them from America or Australia or wherever else in the world they may be broadcasting the Premier League rights. If this is the best one for me, right? If you're travelling to... Rick, if you're travelling to... Where have you just been?
Spain.
Yeah, you've just been to Spain. How much are your flights?
Grand.
Fucking hell, really?
Yeah, for four.
Okay, all right, I was going to say, you don't have to quickly qualify it. The grand's still expensive, isn't it?
Right, okay, yeah.
But, you can use NordVPN to set your computer to a different area of the world and get flights cheaper, because airlines set their prices depending on demand of that specific area. So Spurs are playing, if we draw fucking Porto next in the Champions League shortly, then you can use NordVPN to just make it look like you're not buying them from London, England. And the price
is that how it works? So if I was to dabble in Nord...
Well, you should be already, but yeah.
No, but because I'm a bit of a technophobe, so I needed to hear you sell it to me a few
but
times.
It's funny you say that, Ricky, because so am I. I genuinely am. And as soon as you download it, it just exists in the background. And whenever you want to change to a different country, like, and it's literally got a map on your screen, and you click, say, Denmark. And if you want to download the Danish Spurs podcast called Mark
Lundevide Hard Danes,
if you want to download that quicker than you can in the UK, you use a server in Denmark just by clicking on the map. So if you're struggling with your geography and you don't know where Denmark is in Europe, then you might struggle with the app. But otherwise, it runs in the background. Whenever you want it, just click on the thing in your taskbar and you can access it and change your server wherever. It's so fucking easy.
So different tickets and travel and shit like that.
Yes.
While I'm on my laptop from the UK and I'm trying to buy things, I'm being charged more.
Yes.
Or potentially, and I could use 100%. That and buy something...
You
what
are.
What the fuck? Really?
Right, so Spurs get Porto, right? You could go use NordVPN, use a different area of the world, whatever the server. This server's in practically every country on the planet. And you can book cheaper flights, cheaper hotels, cheaper car hire, anything. So imagine it's like 20 lads, 20 of you, go and watch Spurs versus Sevilla or Real Madrid or wherever we gets drawn against throughout our run towards Champions League glory this season. Using NordVPN, you can actually save huge amounts of money on 20 people. I'm like, you're talking hundreds and hundreds of pounds, not small amounts. And imagine, Rick, we've been away.
We
not that we've ever got up to any of this sort of stuff, but imagine the amount of money that we could have in the kitty, in the whip, for all the debauchery that goes on lads' tours away in Europe. And if there are any ladies listening and your husband or partner goes on these trips, it's not him, but there are others, then you can put so much money in the whip just by doing this. You have someone organised just to download NordVPN and get it. And like I say, price of a cup of coffee is going to save you tons of money. I'm not even mucking about. It's such a good product. Finally, everyone has Netflix. You can use a server in Guatemala. For 99p, you can pick up Netflix for a month, which will cost you, £12 for a year. And it costs you the price of a cup of coffee, NordVPN. Anyway, grab your exclusive NordVPN deal by going to nordvpn.com/thefightingcop to get a huge discount. on your NordVPN plan, an additional 1 month free. It's completely risk-free. It's NordVPN offer a 30-day money-back guarantee. Sorry, so that was a bit bumbly, but I've been on a really long weekend, and I flew back from Scotland from a wedding. I landed, and as we were landing, it occurred to me that Spurs were playing Chelsea in London Derby at Stamford Bridge, and I'd felt fine about it all last week. But Mark, what was your feelings going into the game? Did you, like me, share an air of trepidation going into the derby? Just them lot.
I mean, it's fast turning into a bigger derby than the Arsenal one. But anyway, we can talk about that later. I was more confident than I think I've been in a long time. Certainly after the terrible three games under Conte we had against Chelsea last season. With hindsight, I probably underestimated Chelsea a little bit because they did look pretty strong. But I was real positive. I was looking forward to it. I thought we was gonna, you know, go out there and make a good show of ourselves. And I think we did. But I was a little bit. I mean, I was quickly taken down a couple of pegs in the first sort of within the first 10 minutes, but yeah,
well, less than that, 2 minutes actually, or three.
I think we had a decent opening, sort of 5-6 minutes. We wanted to be in there, but it quickly sort of.
We are going to talk about the actual performance and what went on in the game shortly, but before that, I just want to talk about the mentalness, because we can talk about a football game. There's going to be tons of them this season, and none of them will have the drama of this one. Rick, so I want to ask you a question first. If Romero didn't play for Tottenham Hotspur, would you hate his guts, Ricky?
Absolutely.
You would?
Absolutely. Yeah, totally. Like Lamella as well. Like when you have players that, I think they mentioned it on Sky Sports, that dabble in the dark arts.
When people say that, they're just saying Argentine players. That's what they're saying. They're too scared to say it. Lamella, yeah, 100% Lamella. Do you remember when, and this isn't my view, I'm just saying what people are thinking when they say it.
It pretty much sounds like it's your view.
They've got a track record, is all I'm saying. And I'm not talking about the war either. I'm talking about Maradona. I'm talking about Simeone against David Beckham.
Yeah.
I'm talking about Pochettino, talking about that simulation is a part of the game. It's about winning free kicks. Lamella's just constant shithousery, and now we've got Romero. That is a track record. Probably where prejudices are formed, and out of those prejudices, horrors can be made and created in society. But in footballing sense, so far, at Spurs, there has been a track record with Argentine players being a little bit of enjoying the needle. It's a part of their game, apparently, if you believe Graham Souness. Quickly throw him in there and make it about him. he's a massive part of his game. We're not just talking about his attacking sort of aggressiveness. There's a lot of it. There's the hair pulling. There's the screaming in Azpilicueta's face. I saw when we scored.
Reece James.
The fact that it's happening at Spurs and he's our player and it might give us the advantage. It's fine, isn't it?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, obviously, we are going to lap that up. And I think when you play, you need a certain set of... If you had a team, if you had like 11 players and they were all of the same temperament, you're never going to win games. Well, or at least be a kind of challenging for the title. You need the makeup of many different people within your team. You need the shithouses. You need the people that will come round and try and calm a situation. You need like loads of different like fiery temperaments, whatever it might be. And Romero is kind of the shithousery for us. And if he was on another team, everyone in the league would hate him. But when he's one of your own, you fucking love it. And if that's what it takes to win games where you do have kind of where you're crowding for a corner and you pinch someone or you pull their arm hair or their chest hair or, you know, accidentally tread on the back of their heel, whatever it might be, and act all innocent. And as long as you don't get caught doing it and you rile up the other player and they do something stupid, they lose focus. You know, it's all part of the game, man. And I fucking welcome it. But then if we did have 11 players that were shit housing every fucking game, like the old Wimbledon or something like that, then yeah, I don't think we'd get very far. But, you know, a lovely sprinkle of bastards is exactly what you want. And bring it on.
Just quickly, Romero will face no further action on what he did, which, of course, was grab Cucurella by his hair and just literally yank him down to the ground. Apparently, hair pulling in the Premier League is not listed as an offence. It's not something that happens typically in football, so therefore it's not listed as an offence. And it wasn't enough to be violent conduct, more poor sportsmanship somehow. But what Chelsea were annoyed at, I think, was the fact that why didn't it result in a free kick? VAR looked at it, and if it isn't a red card, then they can't advise the referee to give him a yellow. So therefore, the corner was awarded. What did you make of that situation, Mark?
I mean, it is like you said, by the letter of the law, that there's if the ref doesn't see it and somehow calls a free kick for whatever reason he feels he sees fit, VAR doesn't have, it's not there for them. Because like you say, it's not violent conduct by the letter of the law. So it's not a red card. They can't stop play and advise the ref to go and watch on the screen or whatever. So you know, as shit as it is and as mad as it is, probably it's fine.
It's and, so funny, you know, because
Spurs fans, it's easy for us to sit and say that as well, because if that was against us, we'd be fucking fuming as well, right?
Yeah, but I'd acknowledge that it wasn't a red card. I'd acknowledge
it's not
that
a red card. It's not a red card. It's not violent conduct. Like he didn't injure Cucurella. Cucurella got up straight away. When why are you pulling my hair? But he's not injured. That's violent conduct. Or there's no risk of injury.
What is violent conduct? Because I mean, like grabbing someone by the back of their hair and like a handful, yanking them down to the ground seems pretty violent to me. Now, it's not an elbow to the face, yeah, or punching them or like kicking them in their chest or whatever. But I mean, it's pretty aggressive. And I like what afterwards when they said, "Oh, it's just going to VAR," and I was like, "Right, fucking great. This is all we need now. This is where he's gonna get sent off, yellow card, whatever." And they just said, "Right, playing on to the corner," and I was like, holy fuck, what, like, how has nothing, nothing happened? Nothing.
Well, I mean,
nothing.
A violent conduct is like a dig in the face or a headbutt.
Yeah, there has to be risk. So there has to be either actual, like, a use or an attempt to use excessive force or brutality, I think the rule is, which I don't think hair pulling constitutes.
Well, it's just not in the rule. It is in rugby. It's an offence in rugby, but it isn't in football. Look, if you're having a ruck in the street and someone pulls your hair as an advantage and then batters the shit out of you, it's on you for having long hair. So if anything, it's Cucurella's fault.
I had a funny thought, right? If John Bass was an elite level footballer and he was up against Romero, how many different types of hair do you think he could pull off John Bass?
The problem with John,
like,
Bass,
arm hair, shoulder hair.
But the problem with John Bass is that a Cucurella would have stuck to his back like Velcro, and he would just be. And but John Bass is so big, right? That Cucurella is so little that he'd be sort of flying off him like a cape. John Bass would have no idea he's even on him.
It's just stuck to him on his back, and they're saying, John, he's like behind you, and he's turning round, but he doesn't know that he's there because he's just stuck to his back and he can't feel him.
Just flying around. Like
episode of South Park with the nurse that has the fetus growing off her head. It would just be a Cucurella sitting off Big John Bass's face.
Yeah, exactly. So it felt like we got away with it, and obviously the result of that was the goal. And again, we're going to talk about the goal. We're talking about the performance in a bit. The bigger reaction was what was happening on the touchline, Conte versus Tuchel. So it just started with the first goal where, you know, we'd equalised, well, Spurs' equaliser, which was on the back of this Bentancur tackle. Now, I know we're all Spurs fans. What was your first thought when you saw Bentancur make that tackle, Rick?
I'd probably say it was a foul. Didn't get the ball.
I thought he didn't get the ball either.
But then I watched it back and he got the faintest of touches. Now, if you get the faintest of touches, does that constitute as a great tackle? Or even if you kind of take the player out and you just graze the ball, is that then a foul?
Like, well, it's debatable, but so it's down to the decisions that the ref makes. So if the ref has clearly said that that was a good tackle or a lawful tackle, then VAR, unless he's made a gross error, can't and won't overturn it. And when you look at it back in slow motion, you can see he touches the ball with his toe and puts it away. The ball changes direction, and then he makes, just as a split second later, makes a connection with Havertz' ankle. I appreciate, though, that Tuchel might have thought differently, because like, that's why I asked you about what you thought beforehand. Was, you know, it probably looked like a foul, but actually wasn't.
Yeah, totally. It's one of those. It's one of those ones where it does go either way, and obviously for us, it's gone our way. So we are naturally going to say, "Oh yeah, great tackle." And at the time, I was thinking it was a foul, but no, it went our way. So fuck it.
And then obviously it went up the other end, and Jorginho tried to do something mental in the box. So I dragged back and flick it up, bounced off Son. Eventually came back to Højbjerg and he struck a good, I was surprised it went in, but obviously saw it go in and went mental, but you know, it was well struck and hit the corner. And there was the second part that was, you know, controversial, which was the line of view. But I don't know if you guys have seen the view where it showed Mendy's, you know, how, whether or not he could see the ball based on Richarlison's position when Højbjerg struck. Now, in motion, it's difficult to see, but as he struck the ball, Mendy could see. So, again, it's not an issue. It wasn't an issue. But in the touchline, obviously, Tuchel went crazy. So, two things he was really angry about. Did you think that Conte, when we scored, did he react to Tuchel, in your opinion, Mark? Or was it just sort of a coming together as it happens? Or was Tuchel on his way to complain? Well, how did you think that happened? It kind of looks like Conte turned towards the Chelsea dugout a little bit.
He definitely did a little bit. He did the classic Conte, you know, screaming, turning around to his bench, running over, hugging the bench. And then immediately after he started facing Tuchel. But Tuchel as well. And he'd done this all game up until he was like that. He was in the fourth official's ear, like constantly jabbering at him. And he did that for the goal. He was still going on at them about the free kick, supposed free kick. On Havertz by Bentancur. So I think it was more of a reaction to Conte seeing Tuchel fucking going on and complaining rather than actually just out of the blue jumping on Tuchel.
I read something earlier that from that one where it looks like Conte is turning around to Tuchel and pumping his arms, that he was actually doing it to the away fans. Now, I haven't gone back through the footage to be able to understand whether that's where the actual Tottenham fans were, and that's how it comes across. But
I guess it was in that direction for sure, because they were on that left-hand side in the corner. But
there you go, that's what it was then.
It's a long way to celebrate with the Spurs fans. You know, I'm going to turn away to celebrate with you, but
of course
you're like 80 yards away.
he's done it obviously to Tuchel and to the. To give it some to the Tottenham fans, or at least have that cover up anyway of doing it, which I fucking love even more.
And then, of course, Chelsea score again. And Tuchel reacts. Bearing in mind, they're both in their 50s. Tuchel reacts and charges down the touchline. Apparently, I was listening to John Bass on the Five Statements on Patreon, fightingcop.co.uk/Patreon. Leaving your technical area is the yellow card. And apparently he already did he already have a yellow card? Did I mishear him?
I don't know whether he had a yellow card previously, but I know that is a yellow card offence.
And off he went. And I don't necessarily think it should be, because obviously the game's about emotion. You don't want to sort of box people in literally too much. But off he went, and I was thinking, you're not celebrating with Chelsea fans. All you want to do there is run past Conte and give it some, because to some degree, you're in your rights to do it. You get some, you've got to take it. And I thought Conte did well in sort of putting his head down and walk past him and, you know, just deal with it. But did you see Conte's social media post late last night, Mark or Rick?
Yeah. I've done it.
Which is essentially said, if I'd have seen this, I'd have tripped you over. he's sort of like 57 years old.
You're lucky I didn't see you.
Yeah, you're lucky I didn't see you. You're
lucky I didn't see you.
I love it. Are we, I mean, are we the baddies now? Are we the baddies?
No.
I mean, it kind of did remind me a little bit. The walking away from this game reminded me of the Peep Show. The Peep Show sketch where they've gone to, they've gone to this war sort of remembrance thing where everyone dresses up in character and they talk to each other and they play parts. And Mark ends up dressing up like with his friend who ends up being a severe racist as a sort of not quite a Nazi uniform, but very close to. he looks at the camera. Are we the baddies? Do you feel like Spurs are becoming the baddies in this? Chelsea, they've been so bad for so long that a few games where we kind of turn up and shit house a bit doesn't make us the baddies, does it? Do you feel like we're the baddies or not, Rick?
No, I mean, like I said earlier, that you need a certain kind of the makeup of characters within your team, and Romero being a shit house and Conte as well, of turning around and pumping his arms at Tuchel. And then knowingly that the Tottenham fans are in that area as a kind of get out, to say, oh, I was celebrating with the Tottenham fans. But he knew what he was doing. And the thing is, like, fucking, it's great. I love that, like, I know I shouldn't say his name, Mourinho, but I love the mind games, the shithousery, that, like, what they say and what they do and the kind of theatre of it all and the pantomime villain. I love all that shit in football. And when it's for your team and it's helping you out, you just drink it up even more. And you need these type of characters within your team to help shift the momentum in your way and to kind of see how the game pans out. Because if you don't do those things, like, it used to annoy me. Like, I love Poch, man. I fucking really love Poch. But sometimes when he used to take the professional approach and, you know, I won't say anything and I'll keep myself to myself and I'll play it cool and I'll be an adult about this. Sometimes I just wanted him to fucking lash out and say what every Tottenham fan was thinking about the ref's performance in a certain game or how another manager has conducted himself and how he should just coat that manager off or whatever. But, I think it's good what Conte's doing, really.
there are some fans out there that are saying that Spurs celebrating a last-minute winner like that was a little bit kind of, I don't know, like we'd won something or it was the second game of the season. Why are you celebrating in the way that you are? And all fans do this to other clubs, but I don't know what you make of that, Mark.
It happens all the time, and if it's not your fan base doing it, then you know everyone else is going to cuss it out. Arsenal celebrated a 2-2 draw with West Brom. So
yeah, but that's what I'm saying. That's West Brom,
this is Chelsea. So it's even more justified. We're always going to get this shit, and we just have to. But you know what? It's kind of similar to. I wanted to butt in after the Rick's point on the like if we're the baddies or not. It's kind of the same. It's the same point for me. Is we're thinking about others, like we're thinking about other people's or other fan bases' opinions of us, and we shouldn't give a shit anymore. We had it during, like you said, Rick, during Pochettino's era, where everyone kind of liked us because you know we were plucky, we were underdogs, and we were sort of you know we were doing the 4-2-3-1, and we had Eriksen, and we had all the Kane coming through, and we had all these you know players, but we weren't upsetting the apple cart really because no one was really missing out because we were doing it. And now we are. Now we're starting to really to throw ourselves around a little bit, and people don't like it. You know, people don't like change. They don't like strangers. Who are these new people that they're going to take what I have away from me? And that's what people are reacting to. That's why they hate us all. I love it. We should drink it up. We should keep going. You know, this has happened to all. You know, Chelsea had this when they came through and they became a force to be reckoned with. Everyone fucking hate Chelsea. I don't know, we still hate Chelsea for good reason. But a lot of that's gone away from like the general fan bases. So maybe it's just our turn, but it's fine.
I always felt a bit uncomfortable with that Pochettino stuff about, well, like, if people are like really appreciative, and even other fans were going, yeah, I really like the way you play, I really like Pochettino. And like, I was sitting thinking, you're comfortable with Spurs being sort of good because you still don't see us as a threat, because we're playing nice football, but fundamentally when it come on top, we would get beaten. And throughout Pochettino's reign, as good as it was, there were times where, well, we didn't get over the line. We didn't go over the line. And even in Pochettino's era, towards the the middle part and the latter third, where we were really good and became spiteful, and thinking, going back to the Battle of the Bridge, where then the kind of mood towards Tottenham changed. It's like, hold on, this isn't what we accept. This isn't what we think Tottenham should be. We want the Tottenham that play nice football but are easy to beat. Well, against Chelsea and in other times under the Pochettino era, where we didn't play well, but we made it difficult. Under Conte, it's gone up a level, where we'll find ways to win, and winning is all important. And that is unfamiliar for Spurs, and it's unfamiliar for the way people think about Tottenham. And fans from other football clubs hate us. They already do, which is fine. And I don't know why, because, you know, we've won two League Cups. That's it in 20 years. So they shouldn't hate us, but for some reason they do. And eventually it's going to really hurt when we do win, because not only will we be that club you hate, but it will be that club you have to watch celebrate as well, which is going to be so much harder, because people are used to Chelsea celebrating 20 years with £1.6 billion investment. You know, Manchester City being the club they are, Arsenal winning trophies in the last couple of decades, people expected from Man United and Liverpool. No one wants Tottenham to win. And that's why they react so badly when Tottenham go to Chelsea and behave the way we did and get a result when we didn't deserve it. I think it's... I don't give a shit whether people like us anymore, and I'm happily be the baddies.
It's ridiculous, man. Like, people like saying... or trying to take digs at us because we celebrated in that way. We scored in like the 96th minute at Chelsea, a ground where I think we've won once in 30 years or some shit. And like, our rivalry is on par with the Tottenham-Arsenal rivalry. And like, absolutely two teams detesting each other. And everything else that's gone on within the game, of the bits with, you know, Romero... tackles being left in, Conte and Tuchel, and then Kane pops up with a winner, and you're telling me we ain't going to go
a
mad.
A draw.
Oh, sorry, draw, yeah.
It's funny, Kane said that in the BBC interview.
Exactly. I got carried away then as well. But it's exactly...
It felt like a win, though, didn't it?
Because emotions get the best of you. And what is the fucking point of going to football if you can't express that when you score and equalise in like 96 minutes? It's stupid. And I get why people do that, because they want to take you down. And like you were saying, that everyone hates Tottenham. So that everyone will... jump on that bandwagon because they want to take us down a peg or two. But I don't fucking get it. It makes it even more sweeter for me.
But do you think that... Do people think that this was about anything other than the fact that we denied Chelsea the opportunity to gloat? We denied Arsenal the opportunity to go, no, you've lost, we're 3 points ahead of you, you know, we've won two or whatever. All this was about, all of it. Like, not the players and the fact, because it's different from them. It's a competitive nature for them, and they want to do well on the pitch. And Conte wants his tactics to win. He wants to, you know, be able to get one up on his on his fellow managers and cement his place as one of the great managers. That's their motive, and it should be always. But for fans, for Spurs fans, it was just simply saying, "You thought you had it. You thought you had it, and we found a way to deny you the opportunity to enjoy your football club for a day." And the fact that we've managed to instill that in what is probably millions of Chelsea fans around the world, all have had a worse day because of Harry Kane's header. And that is what football's all about, in spewing misery on others. and then reveling in it, rolling around in it, like a little worm. It's what it's all about. That's what it's all about. And that's what the Spurs fans were celebrating. Rick, don't you think? Like, they were just celebrating the fact that Chelsea didn't get to celebrate.
Yeah, totally. I mean, like, Chelsea, to be fair, like, they had some really good chances and they should have won it. It should have been out of sight for them and they should have kind of shut up shop, got the been in front. I think they went 2-1 up in, was it 77 minutes? Or was it slightly earlier? Whenever it was. But if they're a team for challenging and it's against Tottenham, who always lose at Stamford Bridge, and it's, you know, it's a formality, foregone conclusion, and then we fucking score in the 96 minutes, they would have been they would have been like, most of them would probably been back in the boozers around Stamford Bridge, raised in a glass, done it again against Tottenham.
But
and then that fucking happens.
But we know, because... there's a couple of, so we've all been in that situation in the stadium where we've been done by a late goal or what, like 88 minutes. We've been all over Wigan and they break away and score, a whole breakaway and score. And you're just thinking, oh, fuck's sake. And then, or Arsenal score in the last minute or whatever it might be. We understand, even if we're not Chelsea fans and we don't affiliate with them at all, we don't understand them as a fan base, we do understand what it's like to concede a last minute goal in a game that you're desperate for it not to happen. But you've seen I don't know if you have seen, but there's been like, I don't know why people upload them, but it's been Chelsea fans uploading videos from their end of the Spurs sort of end. Because Perisic is about to whip this in and we score. And you just hear the Chelsea fans going, oh no! Oh no! And that sinking heart feeling that they felt, that dip, feeling their morale, the rest of their day is going to be fucked. The dinner's not going to taste as nice when they get home. The trip to the pub, instead of jubilant celebration, is sort of anger and commiseration and fury at Tottenham. We fundamentally turned their Sunday into what was going to be a good Sunday, where they're going to kind of walk into work with a little sort of, you know, like a chip in their step?
Bit chipper.
Yeah, they're going to be walking in a bit chipper, looking at, waiting for their...
Same morning to everyone.
Yeah.
How's your weekend?
You're all right? And then, Spurs happened. Tottenham
Hotspur
and ruined everything for them.
Anyway, and so that ruined it for a lot of other teams that hate us, thinking, oh yeah, Tottenham getting done again and blah, blah, blah. And then we get the equaliser, and in the way we did it, I bet like Gooners, West Ham, everyone was absolutely sick with it.
Sick to the back
fucking
teeth
sick
of Tottenham Hotspur. Anyway, we're going to break down the game shortly in the more tactical element of it shortly, but we're just going to listen to these messages.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
All right, so let's go into the football a little bit, because Chelsea, despite everything we just said, were good. They were good, Mark, and we were kind of, I think a lot of us, I had thought that while I think that Chelsea's demise is fast coming and they're not going to be the football club that they were under Abramovich, they can't be. 20 years, like I said earlier, £1.6 billion of investment. There will be no other chairman in the world that, not only, that there may be some that are willing, they can't with the rules the way they are. You've seen the way Newcastle are the richest club in the world, and they cannot spend the way Man City and Chelsea did because of the rules. So I just, I know that the Chelsea becoming a much more sort of, just a less financially dope football club is their future. But I think I got carried away with that and thought that that's what's happening right now. But they've got Koulibaly and Sterling and some really good fucking players. Mason Mount was incredible. Was you in the camp of saying, yeah, that we're, you know, it's over for Chelsea, we're now the top dogs, because we're clearly not on the pitch just yet?
I probably was. Well, I definitely was. There's audio recordings evidence of it. So I definitely was. I don't think I can run away from that. But yeah, I mean, I think it was not a mad take though, because you look at some of the upheaval they went through, and I know preseason doesn't mean anything, but Tuchel looked proper rattled in some of his post game interviews and stuff. So, you know, they had players running down their contracts left, right, and centre. Andreas Christensen, Rudiger, Azpilicueta, who's now just signed an extension, but you know, Alonso's still going, and I wasn't sure that they were going to be able to really integrate all these new big names. And to be honest, they still lack something. They definitely still lack a striker. You could tell yesterday, Havertz and Sterling and Mount, they're not going to, you know, you're not going to get a 1 out of 1,000, 1 out of 15,000 Koulibaly volley from the top of the penalty box. You're not going to get that every game.
So frustrating. Like, he hasn't scored a goal in fucking 40 years. Yeah. Yeah. And that was one of the best goals I've ever seen from a centre-back. It was fucking
first
insane.
Home game. Right, absolutely. And totally, we totally didn't prep for it. And we left him. It's not like, you know, I've heard a lot of people say, oh, you know, we should have covered him and all that sort of stuff. But what the fuck is a centre-back going to do at the edge of the penalty box, man?
There was footage of Son pointing at him to Emerson Royal, and Emerson sort of shrugging like, no, I'm in my position. I'm doing what I'm asked to do here.
Yeah, that's the thing is he's been. I think that's something I did notice from yesterday is we look quite rigid, and I guess maybe that's. And I'm totally just musing, pulling shit out of the thin air here, but I think one of the downsides maybe of Conte's way of instilling his way of working into people is maybe they get a little bit scared of not following orders, and we know when we defend corners only, so. If that's the zone Emerson's been told to cover, he's not necessarily going to step out of it, because then he leaves. He was also he was covering the far post. There was no one behind him. So if he pushes up too far, there's a huge gap right behind him. So I think he probably thought, you know what, I'm going to leave this to Koulibaly.
But by the same token, like 99 times out of 100, he doesn't strike that as sweet as he...
That's it. This is what I mean. I think I would have probably made that decision as well.
It's probably a risk worth taking.
Yeah, 100%. So yeah. But yeah, to answer your question, I was definitely writing Chelsea off. Chelsea are definitely very strong still. They still got more gaps. I still don't think they're quite as strong as they were at this point last season. But they were definitely up against us, and so were their fans. You know, they had fucking tifos of Todd Bowley and flags and all sorts. Like, give me a break.
Yeah, no, agreed. Rick, what did you make of it? What did you make of?
So to begin with. Oh man, it was such a roller coaster of emotions, really. I mean, regardless of the score, it was when we first started out, it was this thing of obviously 1-1's there in 30 years, so it's going to be an uphill task anyway. But then I was excited because of our performance against Southampton. We signed 6 new players. So I thought we'd be strengthened and it would be a different team that played Chelsea when we did last season. But then also we lost to them. We lose 3 times to them last season. And I thought, you know, if we could get a draw or a win, then that would be an improvement from when we last played them. So I had all these different things going through, like, yeah, yeah, we could do that. Oh, no, maybe, yeah, the Stamford Bridge. Yeah, but we signed 6 players. Oh, no, but... So I was at the time I was nervous, and when they read the team out, we didn't have one new player in there.
Yeah, I heard you.
And I was a bit.
You punched a wall before the game even started. You punched your front run wall.
No, it was one of my kids.
Oh, the kids. You punched the kids. Yeah. So I knew that, but I didn't know if you wanted that out there.
That's fine.
Which one? The little one or the big one?
Little one. Definitely.
Little one. Yeah, she can't defend herself as well.
Yeah, and the big one broke my finger through throwing football at my hands, yeah. Don't want another football, don't want another broken finger.
You're scared of her now, aren't you? Yeah. She's 13 and you're scared of her.
She's 10.
She's 10. She broke your finger and she's 10 years old.
Yeah, I know.
She's the same size as you?
Slightly smaller. Slightly smaller.
Anyway, so you punched your kid and then what?
Yeah, so I was annoyed, and I kind of I had this feeling of where Conte was saying, "Are we, you know, out of the old rule of buying young, inexperienced kind of rough diamonds that have a sell-on value. No. We need to buy players that are Premier League ready. We need to buy players that are winners, that have that experience, that pedigree. So I thought Perisic would be, you know, definite shouting there. And that's not to say that Cesc had a bad game against Southampton. It's to say that this guy has that in his locker, his experience and pedigree, as I've just said. And he is, he knows that position really well, and he's teaching Cesc. And I just thought that he would be on the front foot, and he would be able to, at the time, I thought it would be pushing Reece James back. But then it was, who is it who's playing that kind of right wing back role for them?
Loftus-Cheek.
Loftus-Cheek. So it was a kind of a decision that I wasn't really expecting. And then obviously six new players, and you think, well, some of them might come in, and it was basically a copy and paste of the team that we played against them last season. So I was a bit down on that. And then after the first half, you know, the first 10 minutes, they had a chance and we had a chance. I think Sonny broke loose, was it maybe? Or someone broke loose.
Yeah, we had a quick, like, 1-2, like two touches, and we were sort of away.
And I thought we could have done something. So that gave me a bit of hope. I thought, hello, like, we've had that. That's the first warning for them. And even though they had a chance on their side. But then they just took control, and it felt very much like the previous games where they pressured us into mistakes. Like, it just felt like we couldn't progress the ball further up. And every time they had it, it felt like they had an extra man creating those kind of triangles and then moving the ball up quicker than we were. And then every time we got the ball back, they were on us straight away like a rash. And we just didn't have that. Like, every time I felt like it would go into our midfield, that it would just go back to them. Whereas when it came into theirs, it felt like they were just a bit more technical and used to that short passing range and moving the ball and outmaneuvering us. And it felt like I'd already seen this program over and over again. You know what happens here, type thing. So I guess the first half, it was a tough viewing, but. One thing I did notice that did flash up on the screen, Sky Sports, was the XG. And theirs was only marginally better than ours. It's quite equal. But even I think we had a lot of the possession.
We had more shots on target at the end of the game than they did.
So that, I mean, it tells a different side of the story. Is, yeah, they had the possession, but were they taking their chances or have better chances than us? And
I mean, maybe
it wasn't in there.
Well, yeah, maybe on another day they would have done. And they definitely were a better team. But I think you can't be lost the fact that, and Conte alluded to this in these post-match interview, was the fact that this is a top-tier European team. This isn't Brentford doing this to us. It's Chelsea are, and like I said, I think we all got a little bit caught up on Chelsea's demise. And that was completely premature based on what we saw in this performance. But if Chelsea are going to be at the top of their game, and if Chelsea are at the top of their game, then the talent they have in their squad is unreal. Like Mason Mount, England international. England are one of the best international teams in the world. He starts. Havertz, one of the best forwards in the world, starts for Germany. You've got Koulibaly, who's been sensational in Italy. So my point is that they are a really good team, and I think we all got caught up a little bit in Chelsea's demise.
I think for me as well, that I didn't get caught up in Chelsea's demise. I think I maybe got carried away with, we've signed six players, we've got Conte, there was a good feeling against Southampton and the way we finished last season. I thought we would be better. And I was, in the first half, I was disappointed with Sonny and Kane. Not that they changed games on their own, but I just felt like they just weren't in the game at all. I think
the Chelsea press nullified them completely.
And normally that would be a bit of a bright spot in any game if Kane can still manoeuvre and ping balls around the corner, if Sonny can still... But there was none of that. And that's when I did panic a bit, as to say, like, fucking hell, how is this second half going to turn out?
Mark, how do you think the introduction of the new players is going to pan out in the as we move forward in the season? Like, is Perisic going to start soon? Will Bissouma start starting? You know, some of these other players, that we've brought in, are we going to see them? Or do you think Conte is going to stick with the same lineup that finished last season? Bearing in mind, we have in the Premier League, I think we're unbeaten in nine.
I think he's still reasonably happy with his with the team he started twice.
That's a nine that included Liverpool, Chelsea, and Arsenal. So it's not nine against a shit. The dross.
It's not bad, is it?
It's not bad, but I get Ricky's frustration in and that's why I'm asking the question: is when will we see some of these new players that we assume are going to improve our first team?
So I think we saw one clear benefit from the new signings in Perisic over Sessegnon, and especially in a big game like this was. I don't know if it's quite at the level where he's starting yet, because he still needs a little bit more match fitness, which has been the biggest problem. But I think Perisic over Sessegnon will be the first new starter we see. Or the new player we see starting over a previous first 11. I think Richarlison is still going to be a bench option for a while. Bissouma, there's an argument for him instead of Bentancourt. It looks like, and I'm not just saying that with my Viking helmet on, but it looks like Højbjerg is still a favourite this season. He keeps just playing the full 90 and he scores a goal. So I think he's still going to be preferred. But we have to be... You have to be reasonably happy with that as well, because they're two. I mean, if Perisic becomes fully match fit and he starts starting, we are definitely going to see some of those things that we saw. You know, I mean, his set pieces are amazing. His cross, I know his first corner delivery wasn't great, hit the first man, but that second corner, because
there's a big thing made about that first corner he had where he hit the first man.
Yes.
It happens all the time, all the time. Some of the best players in the world hit the first man because of what they're trying to do is so low percentage.
It's corners are, there's a reasonably short or low success rate from corners, even though in England you fucking love a corner over here. Oh, it's a corner. We've got a goal. Yeah. We actually got a goal from a corner now, but the percentages from that are quite low. But Perisic, and let's just remember as well, Perisic took both those corners. He can take better corners with both feet than anyone else in that squad. I think also Son has a small goal.
Want to pull you back there just for a second. What do you mean, especially in England, what we sort of fucking love?
You Brit, you fucking
we don't understand the game.
Love a corner. What do you mean? I don't get it. It's just, I don't know, it's just a thing.
Yeah, me and Ricky, we're Brits, right? And we knew that we were going to score that second corner. You were going, I hope we score. We were like, this is a goal.
In a little accent.
Do you know why I like corners? It's something like... The childlike in me is that you get to see your players that are up close and personal. Like, you get to see Sonny right fucking next to you. It's mad.
It's so good, isn't it?
I'm like, this is fucking mad. Look at him.
It is also fun. You get that little suck in of breath and you go, as the ball comes in, you know, both when you're defending and attacking. But, it is quite fun.
We're all men in... I'm in my 40s. I don't know what you're in. You guys are both in your late 30s, aren't you? It doesn't matter. We're similar age, right? We're similar age.
Very late 30s, yeah.
Right, so and when you're in the ground, especially where Ricky used to sit in White Hart Lane, and I think you're still quite close to the front.
Yeah.
But even as an older man, as I'm becoming certainly into middle age, based on my lifestyle, I'm probably pretty much past it. But just when you're on the touchline, or close to it, and then you see, like you said, Sonny at the front post, or Kane walks past you. It's so strange that I could probably father a couple of those. The age difference would mean that I could, like, legitimately, and no one would look at me like I was like throwing my dick around at a very young age, legitimately have kids in that first team. And I look at them like I'm their son. Like, I think if I met Kane, I'd be like, I'm just talking to my dad. That's how weird it is, and it's so weird to see him in the flesh up front. So that's why English people like corners.
Yeah,
not because of your sense. Yeah. All right, I understand football, the technical aspect of it, and corner is not actually that effective. So I'm not going to enjoy the corner. That your world, like fuck that world. You live in that on your own. Me and Ricky will enjoy corners if that's right. Yeah.
Corners are shit. But anyway, we could be good at corners now. We've got Perisic and.
It's great that Perisic can take an in-swing corner effectively from both sides. Mm-hmm. Like that second corner, I don't think enough has been made of how good that corner was. It took out the entire Chelsea team, because they're banking on the fact that it hits near post because it happens so much. There was five of them grouped. There's a photo that shows four Spurs players alone as Kane leapt to head that ball. I wasn't sure who scored. I was convinced that Richarlison had scored because he ran away. But you saw the replay is that Kane fell in the net. So he scored, he bundled into the net, he fell. Everyone's going mad and celebrating the fact that he is. And then Kane comes out of nowhere with his arms celebrating like he'd scored. And I was like, why is he claiming the goal? Because I hadn't seen it. I thought Richarlison had. And the mayhem ensued. I don't know where I was going with that. It was just mental. It was amazing. And I love the fact that Kane just ran into the crowd. It's almost like everything has been forgotten about him now. Just on Kane, he scored seven goals in seven games against top six opposition since Conte arrived. So that was an interesting stat, I thought.
Yeah.
Flying under him. What did you make of the impact of Richarlison when he came on? Obviously, there were balls bouncing off him somewhat, but harrying, the pressure, the energy, the needle that he was given was kind of, we needed to upset the rhythm somewhat. And while we went to that back four and it became a little bit more open for Chelsea, we had to gamble. That was a decision Conte made. We had to gamble. What did you make of his inclusion, Ricky, as he came on?
Taking Cesc off and bringing him on, I was like, I don't know how we're lining up now. I don't know what we're doing. I don't know tactically. I don't know how he's going to fit in. What are we going to have four up top? Like, how is this going to work out? Are we going to go to back four? But who's going to fit? You know, all these things playing out in your head. And I think it's exactly the thing that got us back into the game, where it's disrupting, where Chelsea was so pretty dominant in the first half. And then bringing Richarlison on, that you've got an extra runner there. You've got Kane and Richarlison up close together as well. Like, where's Son going to go? Where's Kulusevski? Like, who's got who? Like, and that's exactly the thing that we needed to do to disrupt how they were, who was picking up who, and where the balls were going into. So I thought it was great. And then it was really interesting as well, because then obviously Tuchel changed his formation as well. And he made a sub. I think it was Jorginho went off and I can't remember who else came on. But it was just really interesting to see both of them trying to get the upper hand of each other and just changing the different tactics and tweaking it. And you could see how in the game it was playing out, because the game was swinging in both directions, that who the dominant team was. But Mark was saying earlier, like, again, like bringing in a player like Richarlison, he maybe not getting the first team, but when you're smashing down 50 mil and then you have a player that, reading lots of like Everton forums and seeing how how they received him. I actually met an Everton fan on holiday and he was saying the guy is just a workhorse, and like all this other shit that you see about him in the papers, that he's not a hard worker, he's going to have the arse because he ain't in the first team. He said it's total and utter bullshit. He'll be there for the team. He's a great person. He works hard. And that's the type of impact that you're expecting when he gets brought on.
What did you make of his inclusion and the kind of tactical change, Mark? What did you make from what went on?
I thought it was brilliant. At first, like Ricky, I was a bit like, what the fuck? And I thought we were going to go to a 4-4-2 to start with. It was evident we were going to go to a 4-back-4. And then it turned out to be a 4-2-4 or a 4-2-2-2, which is kind of one of Tuchel's preferred plan Bs as well.
What are you saying that you might be playing mind games with Tuchel then?
He pulled a little bit of a sneaky one on him.
I rated the ballsiness of it. Like, we could have got.
I loved it. I was all in. When you take off a defender and you put on a striker, not just an attacking midfielder or number eight or whatever, but an actual striker, that's a big ballsy move, and I fucking loved it. I'm absolutely here for it. And it's something we did criticise Conte a little bit for not doing last season, but he didn't have the bench to do it. So, you know, we called him pragmatic on more than one occasion, I think. And this wasn't pragmatic. This was a big formation change to have played three at the back for his entire time, to all of a sudden go four at the back and then stay roughly with the same midfield, but then have four strikers, either in a flat four or two and two.
At Chelsea away, no less.
At Chelsea away, and we're chasing the game. Like that's ballsy, and I loved it. And what I was really impressed about is how quickly the players adapted to it as well, because you could just tell straight away that they adapted to it and they understood it and they were up for it as well. It wasn't like he was trying something and they didn't buy into it. They were absolutely up for it. We all of a sudden, something clicked. Tuchel is then to his the faint, if we can throw him the faintest of praise, he really quickly sussed that out and changed his formation as well to, I feel like it was more of a 3-4-3, but yeah, man, like it's so good to see us have that ability to change how we set out and that the players look up for it and they look sharp. And Richarlison was definitely a huge, huge part of that. It was great to see. Perisic.
Yeah, Perisic for sure. But Richarlison, while he won't get any plaudits because of those, there was a couple of times where it came to him and it kind of sort of bounced off him a little bit. It wasn't quite as neat and tidy as you'd hope. But he didn't give the Chelsea defenders or the midfielders a moment's pause. He just always was on them. They didn't have a moment to set. He was there and he was harrying. He was fresh, you know. And while you might look at it and think, you want Conte's changes or any manager of any club that you support will want their manager to make changes and suddenly the complete flow of the game changes and you're dominant. Like in an ideal world, that's what happens when you bring on some new players or just bring on some subs. But in this instance, that wasn't going to happen. And what we needed to do is find a way to just get back in the game and get that point or win. And it wasn't pretty, but Conte's changes, even if they did come late, did have an impact. And we didn't lose the game. Richarlison did make an impact. Perisic did. And maybe he was using Perisic as a player that wasn't completely fit, who could only play 30 minutes against, or 25 minutes, or whatever it might be, against a team as good as Chelsea. So what I'm asking is, do you give credit to Conte for changing it and going a little bit more gung-ho, or do you think we got lucky, Rick?
Oh, no, you have to give credit, totally, because the way that the first half went, you just kind of felt that if the game continued in that trajectory of how Chelsea were of possession and the chances they were getting, that we weren't giving them something different to think about. So the game was just going to play out, and I think Chelsea probably would have won. But by doing this, I think it really did. It did give them something to think about, and they had to change it. So definitely, I'm not one for saying that, this game was great, battle of the tacticians and mind games and stuff like that, because that ain't my thing. But it was fucking great. It really
so much,
was.
So much fun.
Yeah, it's good. It was really good to see.
There's nothing more that you can guarantee with Conte being at the helm than at times we're brilliant and then other times it's just going to be mayhem. You have to accept it. If we lose, there's going to be mayhem. There'll be fallout to his comments. Or if we saw yesterday where Conte goes to shake Tuchel's hand and Tuchel grabs hold of it and he turns around and Conte's going, "What the fuck are you doing? You're grabbing hold of my hand." Tuchel went, "Look, you've got to look me in the eyes." There's literally video footage of last season where he shook Sean Dyche's hand and didn't look him in the eyes, and Sean Dyche pulled him up on it. There was like a commotion. And my point is he's a rat. And we hate him. But the point is also is that there's never a dull moment with Conte in charge. Did you see the footage of Richarlison after Conte had been given the red card for the fallout? Richarlison grabbed the ref and just kept walking over and pointing at Conte.
It's so funny.
I'm literally watching it as I'm talking. he's pointing at Conte. Literally pointing at him as Conte's walking by. The ref gives Tuchel the red card. Tuchel looks at him and Richarlison just sort of shrugs like, "What do you want me to do? Of course I'm going to do this. Obviously I'm going to do this. Why are you..." It was fantastic. We have got a team that is born to win. Like, and God knows what we will do this season. But we're just acting in a different way now. And I'm all for it. Let's just see what will happen. We'll have a quick break now for these messages, but we'll do your questions just now.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial. And with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown. And through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
Let's get into the questions then, boys. We haven't got many, right? Because I put a request out for questions, as we always do on the Fighting Cock on Twitter. And it, almost all of them were to do with Tuchel and, understandably, Tuchel and Conte. But we'll answer the questions that weren't about that so much, because we've obviously covered over and over again. Connor Malaf, he says, do you agree yesterday showed the need to bring in reinforcements into the back five? Conte's system allows players like Dier and Davies to look better than they are, but they are not at the level required to seriously challenge. Mark, you go.
I think I've said this before. We can upgrade on a lot of our players. And I think we're going to see it in some of the really big games. But you know, like right now, there's no need to panic. There's certainly not anyone there that's a massive worry or a massive gap. But yeah, look, we can absolutely upgrade on a couple of the players that we relied a lot on last season. Dier, Davies, Højbjerg for sure. But it's not to a degree that we should like shit our kicks. And
can we challenge the league with Davies and Dier? I'm not saying we can't. I think we can, but there are people out there that don't agree.
No, I agree, but people are looking at that through the prism of the teams that we're going to be comparing ourselves to are your Liverpools. I mean, when Joel Matip joined Liverpool, no one was saying, fuck me, he's brilliant. But now they're saying Joel Matip's a brilliant centre-back, you know? Trent Alexander-Arnold wasn't a world beater when he joined Liverpool. These things kind of evolve. We do need to get over the line. We do need to win something. But once we get something to show for all this... these players will have a lot easier time of convincing our fans or not fans, non-fans, that they do belong in this side. I think Davies is a brilliant footballer, but I think we can upgrade on him, for instance.
Ricky, what do you make? You strike me as a man, Ricky, who wants some new sort of sexy European signings to take over from Dier.
Some Germans,
Hoffenheim.
Keep Romero.
German gymnast.
And get four new players in. That's what I say. Nah. I would... Yeah, exactly what Mark's just said, really. I think Davies, I think Longley could do a job there. I think he's probably better using the ball and helping beat the press. But then also, we don't know what his defensive capabilities are. And Ben Davies is an actually good defender. Do we want to go out and spend? I don't think we're going to go out and spend a big chunk of money on this left centre back that we're after, like Bastoni or the guy from Leipzig,
Pau Torres,
or Pau Torres. And I can't see there being a late transfer or anything off the ground. It doesn't sound like there's been any movement with any of those players. So defense wise, it's tough because I can't even remember now, but I don't think Spence was even on the bench. Was he on Sunday?
Oh. Yeah, he was. Wasn't he?
No, he wasn't. No, he wasn't.
Oh, right. He wasn't named in the squad. I think he was there watching.
I saw him on the pitch. That's why I thought that.
So like we had Royale, Doherty was on the subs bench, but where is Spence? Like, I'd like to we bought this, young talent who's known for just motoring up that right hand side as a wing back. We've seen him give other teams problems, and I felt like we could have pushed Chelsea back and made a bit more going forward. And using someone that can carry the ball pushing forward. But that option wasn't even on the bench. It was just Doherty and Royal. So it's like,
Do you know,
I don't want to say, shall we buy another right back? But I mean, like, is
it won't be? It certainly won't be a defensive right back. But there may be, you know, because the fact that Lucas Moura came on as a right wing back late on.
Fuck yeah! Fucking hell! Fucking hell!
So if they're going to buy anyone, it'll be someone who can, who is better at playing. It's in the same way that Loftus-Cheek did and the right wing back, and Victor Moses did, and Conte's Chelsea. So if it is, it's going to be a forward player who plays there rather than, you know, another right defensive right wing back. But I always, so whenever someone says that about, like, and I thought about it as well, about Jed Spence coming in, excited about him. Like, we were really excited about Troy Parrott when Mourinho was at Spurs, and Mourinho made a point of putting him in the side so that we could see that he wasn't ready.
Yeah.
Do you remember?
Yeah, I do. Yeah.
He came in, he was... Sorry, go on.
We've had a similar thing with Dane Scarlett as well, and it's quite dangerous. I mean, we just talking about 10 minutes ago, Sessegnon has been brilliant, and we've got really high hopes for Sessegnon, but he definitely probably wasn't mentally ready for this game and got shown up a little bit. And I think we need players that have that mental fortitude, and so that's a big part of, I think, why Conte is still holding back on Spence a little bit. I think he's definitely got the ego to do it, but does he have the actual the fortitude and the aptitude to be there and do it? I'm not 100% sure. So I think that if we do sign players, certainly this window, probably in January as well, it'll be less of a future signings and it'll be more players that can come in and strengthen from day one.
Just to go back to that Troy Parrott thing, was that like 2 years ago we wanted him to play, and two years later he's on loan at Preston North End. So not to say that he couldn't be cultivated and he could have had a better career, but I think, like, you just have to trust. Like, as fans, we just think, oh well, that Jed Spence is good. Like, we've seen the YouTube videos and we saw how attacking he was, but there's one thing being really attacking and effective in the Championship, and one thing being doing it at Stamford Bridge in the Premier League. Is like two games into the season, maybe it was too much, but I'm
just 10 minutes. That's all I asked. Just a cheeky 10.
But he didn't.
And then the whistle blows on 93, 8 minutes.
But he just didn't put him on, and we
look at him.
No, but he didn't put him on, and we drawed. So
that's true.
He will play. He'll get games against in the League Cup and maybe in the FA Cup. And we're going to take the FA Cup seriously, I hope. But not then, maybe. Although maybe I'm wrong, and he could have been absolutely fantastic. That was it pretty much from the questions. I have had a little look on Twitter, and there are a couple more that might work. Finn, as he says, do you think that this is progress from last season? Have we made progress, Ricky?
Didn't we lose to Southampton at home?
Yes,
so
we did.
So we got 3 points there, and did we lose to Chelsea away?
Yeah, we did.
Progress. Six new players. Progress.
I don't know where Finnis was coming. I don't think he's saying that there wasn't. I think maybe he's asking the question. Mark, do you think there's been progress? There has, isn't there?
Of course, yeah. There's been massive progress. You know, we've got a bench this season, which we didn't have before. We've got Conte has had a pre-season, which he hasn't had so far. There's been progress in our backroom staff. Levy has done what we've wanted him to do for years and years and years, and stepped away a little bit and had a director of football in. There's been massive amount of progress. And we saw it at the tail end of last season in terms of footballing results. But we haven't seen any this season so far. But the first two results are really encouraging, and all the other moves that we've made, all the other progress, a lot of it off the pitch, bodes very, very well.
It does indeed. I think we'll round it up here. And there was a question about which fan base will we trigger next, and I think there's going to be many, many that are upset with our players and upset with Romero's antics and Richarlison's antics and the way Conte behaves. But fuck it, we're all in. We have to be all in.
All of them, I hope.
Yeah, every single club.
I've Can I say something on that? I seem to have really upset the Brentford fan base.
How? There's only like 12 of them.
I called them out for... and well, yeah, they're all on my fucking mentions calling me a sexual offender and all sorts.
Why? What did you do?
Because I cussed them out for booing Ericsson. I said they were a shit little club and I called them Tories. And they didn't like it.
But this is because you're...
I'm on my tweets. It's funny.
But this is my issue, is that you're only saying that. If he wasn't Danish, you would never have called them out. This is you being a nationalist. And you called them out for being Tories, but you're worse. You're a nationalist. You're even more extreme right wing. You're defending your countrymen. What say you?
None of that's true. I'm defending a Spurs legend, an absolute top class player.
You're not. They've
totally rubbished.
Where was you on Twitter? Where was you on Twitter when Gareth Bale was having shoes thrown at him? You were nowhere. I didn't see you. I didn't see your Twitter account going.
I think it was a holiday.
The thing is it's great. Like, and I get it, and I would be the same about it. But don't, like, if you're ever having a drink with Mark, don't bring up or have a go at Danish players, because he turns into an extreme right wing nationalist. I think that's fair to say.
That is just not true.
It's true. It's true. Mark, every time you like someone, like, even when you say Højbjerg should perhaps be dropped for Bissouma, you're saying it for gritted teeth.
I hate it, and I don't mean it. Yeah,
it's normal. Definitely. It's fine. Everyone's proud of their country. It's fine. It doesn't mean you're like a right wing nationalist. Right. Okay. So that is the the end of the fighting cock. Just for the record, Mark Nesbitt isn't a right wing nationalist.
Not a Tory. Very much not a Tory.
Oh, well, that's debatable. It's up to you what you say. Just say the right things, and then people won't think that about you, would they?
Mm-hmm.
Ricky is a raving Tory. This has been the Fighting Cock. Bye.
Podcast Network.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm gonna make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you wanna get mixed up in the family business?
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather, now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply.